bonus.
Hello and welcome to the Geeks Codex podcast, episode 15. We are here this week to do our retro recommendations, I believe we decided to call it. We're going to talk about games and stuff from the past. We've all got different cut-off points, though, because I think we mentioned a few weeks ago we were going to do games from before we were 14, so we've all got different eras of gaming to talk about now.
Well, I mean, not by that much.
And from that voice there, you could tell that, hi, I'm your host, Matthew Briggs. I'm here hosting a podcast, like I always do. I'm joined by the ever-effervescent James Cook.
Wow, I got pushed up in the ranking. All I had to do was interrupt you. Incredible.
I'm fucking with the order.
Oh, we're subverting expectations today.
Are we?
I don't think anyone expects us anything from us, really. Yeah.
It's very freeing.
And the rest of our regular cast members, we have Ashley Pearson.
Shit, I wasn't expecting
that. That's it.
Just like, fuck!
Keeping you on your toes. And of course, this podcast would not be possible without our extremely amazing editor, Paul Stevens.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting, so...
You sound bummed.
He looks really nervous.
Well, it's just more, I'm just going to be talking about a game let's see how it goes.
So before we begin this episode, we did a bit of a randomizer because we all wanted to go first or last, and it turns out that James is going to be introducing a game to us first, so prepare yourselves for what I imagine to be a fairly pretentious video game.
It's okay. So the game that I picked, and I was mentioning beforehand, like, Briggy, you knew I was going to pick a Dreamcast game, right?
I figure as much.
It was either that or I was going to do like the fucking... I was going to do the fucking Sega Saturn or something ridiculous. But no, I wanted to talk about Jet Set Radio on the Dreamcast.
Oh, fucking of course.
I said that Briggy, before this podcast, was going to be like, of course he chose that fucking game. But Jet Set Radio was genuinely like a really influential game on me, like growing up as somebody who was interested in video games. Like, wait, in part.
So when you say it was influential on you, you didn't don rollerblades and go out and commit graffiti?
No, but I do wear a lot of neon clothing.
You're not currently cell shaded.
No, but I do have neon coloured hair and wear a lot of neon clothing.
Do you listen to a lot of pirate radio?
I used to. That's not a joke. I did used to. And but no, like I feel like when people talk about Jet Set Radio, right? So they normally talk about either, like you said, like the aesthetics, because it was one of the first cel-shaded games, like cel-shaded 3D games. If not the first, I know that there's some contention around that. Or they talk about the soundtrack, which is fair, because it's fucking baller. Like, can we just take a moment to appreciate that it's got a fucking great soundtrack? But one of the things I actually think is most interesting about it, as somebody who grew up with the game, like, I used to play this game fucking obsessively. Like, I easily put, like, 500 hours into that game as a kid. I loved that game. But going back to it in 2019, I'm really surprised by how much it sort of preempts in terms of, like, modern 3D level design. So, like, on a sort of, like, I guess, nerdier level. Like, one of the things is that when it... Because Jet Set Radio, for those who don't know... came out in the year 2000, both in Japan and North America and Europe, I believe. So it wasn't like first generation 3D games, but it was one of the sort of early, nobody really knew how to do 3D yet games. And it's interesting because it's very much not always acknowledged as being one of the first sort of quasi open world games. So the gameplay of Jet Set Radio is that you are a Japanese street punk who goes around tagging graffiti in Japan, trying to avoid the police that get increasingly aggressive and violent towards you. It's a game that has no, like, fight mechanics. It's a game where it's about running away under a time limit, not about, like, confronting the enemies that come after you more and more the longer that you take, and attempting to hit targets by exploring the environment. So it's a game in the early-ish stages of 3D that was one of the sort of progenitors of 3D open-world environments, where the entire game is exploring an area under a time limit and under pressure. Like, everything that you do in Jet Set Radio is basically oriented around exploring the environment. So I'm actually really curious, now that I've kind of gone through that basic spiel, like, did anybody here play, or has anybody here played, either Jet Set Radio or Jet Set Radio Future?
Yeah.
Yeah. Briggy, I know you have. Have you, Paul?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you ever play it, Ashley?
Nah.
No. Okay. So,
Did you have a Dreamcast, Ashley?
Nah.
There you go.
Hey, they did just that radio feature on, was it the Xbox or the Xbox 360?
Yeah, Xbox.
Yeah.
I didn't have an Xbox either.
Very few people did.
It's on Steam now.
Yeah, it is. I was going to say, like, you can get it really cheap on Steam. But, so...
You don't need to.
I was going
to
say, judging by, like, the game that I played and the... like my previous experience with playing earlier games, I'm probably not going.
Yeah, no, you don't have to. Like, one thing I do want to say is, like, it's janky as fuck. Because it's a 2000s 3D game based around exploration on a console that only had one joystick, which means that the camera is terrible. And, like, there's even, like, 4 years after fucking Super Mario 64 nailed it, they're all still working out how to do a game in 3D space. But I'm really interested in early 3D games because it's kind of one of those situations where the exploration of 3D space is kind of like the novelty. Like, I find that really interesting because nowadays, and especially I think people who didn't grow up with early 3D games, which is even people in my, like, age group, if they didn't grow up as gamers, because I played this game when I was, like, 7. So, like, I played this game from a fairly early age, but some people didn't really start gaming until they were, like, 15 or 16. But one of the interesting things is the entire gameplay of Jet Set Radio, and I didn't really think about this until I played it recently, is just exploring the space. And one of the things that's kind of innovative about Jet Set Radio, and which the developers at the time talked about, is that they tried to introduce, like, natural level design. So in much the same way that people talk about System Shock 2 as really influential in terms of level design, because instead of being designed in the way that something like Doom is, where it's designed for gameplay, it's designed in a way that attempts to be naturalistic. Like System Shock 2 has an actual space station where you're actually attempting to explore, like, a real space. I never really thought of Jet Set Radio as a game like that, but playing it back, it's designed in the same way. Like, it attempts to be a somewhat realistic city space that you're attempting to explore. And one of the things that makes that interesting is that it's a game which is basically, in a lot of ways, a single-player racing game. So the stages are done as time-limited. Like, you have a time that is, ticking down to finish the stage and complete your goals, which is basically you're playing a graffiti artist on roller skates. You're attempting to get to awkward places and tag enough things that, you know, you complete the level or whatever. And one of the things that's really interesting is that that creates a situation where the whole gameplay is about, like, speed and momentum in a 3D space that, because it's a Japanese city and, like, specifically, like, a Japanese urban city, is very vertical. Like, I've not played, and I've played a lot of, like, early 3D games. I don't know if you can tell from this whole spiel, but I'm really obsessed with early 3D games and, like, level design. But, and, like, it's very vertical. It's something where they introduced, like, a grinding mechanic, which, as far as I'm aware, is one of the first games to introduce a mechanic like that to try and maintain speed on vertical level exploration. And so you get this situation where, even though it's a really janky game, and even though it's, like, in a lot of ways a very difficult game to play as a modern player, because, like, again, only one joystick. How did it take them so long to work out there should be two fucking joysticks and the camera should be on the joystick? But it's really interesting to play in a modern context because it feels more modern in a lot of ways than games of a similar type from that era, because you're constantly moving throughout a big open space. It's a game that is not centered around, like, violent interaction, which, again, I feel like for a sort of, I guess, AAA game, nowadays, we still treat that as kind of a novelty, and back then, in 2000, like, definitely a novelty. But, it's one of those games where I just return to it over and over again because the level design is so interesting. Stylistically, it is very interesting. Like, it has a lot of influence from Japanese pop culture of the 2000s. It has a lot of influence from American pop culture from the 2000s, but, like, filtered through a Japanese perspective. Like, it has all of this influence from, like, American hip-hop from the 2000s, but, like, imported, and nobody knows what the actual context is. And then it all kind of comes together into this thing where it's like, I don't think that there's a game that's quite like Jet Set Radio, and I definitely don't think you could get a major studio. What kind of a major studio? Like, one of the things I wanted to mention was this is a game that was made by Sega as, like, a quote-unquote AAA game, but it was done by like a smaller team. It was by God Smallbright or something like that, as a second party developer. So I didn't realize until I went and looked it up on Wikipedia, which is one of the reasons why I brought notes in for this. But Briggy, you know Panzer Dragoon.
Panzer Dragoon.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was the same fucking team.
Did you not?
No, I genuinely didn't realize it was the same team. So obviously Panzer Dragoon is like the famous actually good Sega Saturn game. There's like three whole good Sega Saturn games.
Hey, there's five.
What are the other two?
Sorry, I have podcast flashbacks from anyone mentioning Panzer Dragoon, specifically Panzer Dragoon Saga.
How many discs? All of the discs.
Hey, Nuge, if you're out there, I mentioned that fucking game for you again.
Someone's got it. Yeah, if we're going through the five Sega Saturn games that were actually good.
Alien Resurrection, right? Which one was the Aliens first-person shooter game? That was on Saturn. That was good.
Yeah, but it was better on the PlayStation.
Okay, so no, just to cut in here, one of them is fucking Nights into Dreams. Don't let Briggy say it's not.
It's not.
It is.
But yeah, it has Burning Rangers.
Yeah.
It has Guardian Heroes.
Yeah.
The Daytona that's on the...
Daytona!
Okay, I haven't played that one. Okay.
It's like every arcade machine... Like, you go into, like, Skegness or something, you can hear Daytona at the back. You walk in, you're next to the 2P machines, it could be, like, a 5-mile-long arcade, and you can still hear, Daytona, for, like, 8 fucking arcade cabinets lined up.
It calls to you, Brittany.
It does. Fucking love Daytona.
Fighters Megamix.
Yes,
which,
correct.
And also, additionally, any number of the ones that are second tier. They had one of the Shining Forces and things like that.
Okay, also Nights into Dreams. You're all wrong for not mentioning it. Anyway, Nights into Dreams should have been on that list. Shut the fuck up. But no, so one of the things that I do think is really interesting is that it very, like Jet Set Radio very clearly comes from people who were involved in early ideas of like what makes the change from a 2D game to a 3D game interesting. Because that's what Panzer Dragoon is. I'm probably mispronouncing that, but...
No, it's Panzer Dragoon. It's also Star Fox.
So, like, it's... The thing that makes that game interesting is that it's somebody who thinks... It's clearly made by people who think moving from 2D to 3D is interesting. That can be the gameplay gimmick. And in a lot of ways, Jet Set Radio isn't as obvious about it, but it is a game about being a 3D game where you get to run around it big for the time, like 3D world... And a lot of it is about momentum and movement, and it's a game which just kind of assumes that you will find being on roller skates in a big, open 3D world where you can grind along a realistic city and try and find creative routes around. It assumes you will find that to be an interesting challenge. And that's something that I think a lot of 3D games have kind of lost. They don't assume that navigating a 3D environment is interesting, because nowadays we've all kind of grown up used to the idea that that's just normal. And so going back and playing, like, Jet Set Radio, the interesting thing about it for me as a retro game is that it's, like, a very specific point in time where moving around a 3D environment was itself interesting. Mm. And, like, I remember it being interesting. Because, again, I played this game when I was, like, 7, and it had come out on the Dreamcast. And, like, I had played 3D games before, but I'd never played ones that were so interested in momentum. Like, when you play it, when you're grinding up a hill and then you're doing a trick off the top of a rail, and then you're continuing. It's very much like that Tony Hawk feeling of, like, smooth fluidity, except instead of being in a half pipe that's designed to do tricks on, you're trying to work out how to do it in an actual city.
It's part of... There were... On the Dreamcast, there were, I think, 3 or 4 games where that 3D element was the core. You had Crazy Taxi.
Yes. Crazy Taxi was another game I considered for this.
Yeah. And obviously Sonic Adventure.
And Sonic Adventure 2 more so. Sonic Adventure 2 built, I think, again, because it's a Sega game, like, with the grinding in Sonic Adventure 2 and the Sonic and Shadow levels, it feels very much like the people from, say, Sonic Team played, like, Jet Set Radio, which was very popular in Japan and in the US and Europe was, like, a cult hit. And, like, amongst game developers and game designers, it's like that joke people make about Velvet Underground where hardly anybody listened to it, but everybody who did started a band. Mm. Like, hardly anybody played Jet Set Radio, but everybody who did wants to be a level designer. Like, you can sort of see the influences in Sonic Adventure 2 with... I'm particularly thinking of, what's it called? The forest level with Sonic, where he's going down all those grinds. Mm. It's It's green something.
The one before you get to the gun facility.
Yeah, the yeah. one where they're at the end of it, they're like, ah, shit, things are going to blow up and stuff.
The one where you get to the end of it and you fight Shadow for the first
yes,
time.
Yes, that one. I can't remember the fucking game. Being. All of the level names in that game are fucking generic. But yeah, no, like you can play that and you can kind of be like, oh, I can see how this influenced other developers. Hmm. And that's, I actually think even though it's really janky, even though it's really difficult, even though I think if you don't have nostalgia for it, it can be very much like, well, what's so interesting about this? Because it's not like, if you've grown up with this stuff as default, it's probably not that interesting. I do think it's worth playing for anybody who's interested in the history of level design, purely on the basis that it is kind of unacknowledged in a lot of ways in like mainstream gaming culture as being the progenitor of a lot of stuff that's very sort of ubiquitous now. Mm. Because it wasn't that famous, but again, game developers played it. I have seen so many people who have worked as level designers reference it in terms of doing open world games. Like, it's very much something that is influential, and I think it's worth playing if you are at all interested in the sort of history of 3D level design. And also, like, it's neon-colored fucking graffiti game where the soundtrack is banging. Like, come on, it's like usually like £3 on Steam. Just fucking buy it.
I found the level name for you.
What is it?
It's called Green Forest.
Oh, I do you know, I was gonna say that and then I was like, it can't fucking be called Green Forest. No, but who?
Which is followed by my personal favorite level from that game, which is Pumpkin Hill.
You liked Pumpkin Hill?
I like the soundtrack to Pumpkin Hill.
Oh, I mean, I like the soundtrack, but like, that level can go fuck itself. The only one that's worse is the one that is the fucking timed one with Rogue, where they randomize the emerald locations. Anyway, we're not here to talk about Sonic Adventure 2, which I considered talking about, but then I was worried that I'd just have a fit and fall over, so...
I've only got the Hero 1 up, I can't find this.
I like to think that Jet Set Radio is an influential game, and I think that people should play it if they're interested in level design. And also if they like neon colours and banging soundtracks. And also if they want to see hilarious warnings come up at the beginning reminding you that graffiti is illegal because they're very worried that you will think that graffiti is legal because of this game and go get arrested.
It's like Metal Gear Solid 4's don't be smoking while Snake smokes on the loading screen. Yeah. Smoking's bad for you.
The especially funny thing in Jet Set Radio is that Jet Set Radio is basically about how you're not violent and you're not really doing anything wrong. Because as it turns out, doing graffiti isn't actually that bad of a thing. But also, the police are willing to unnecessarily do like a police brutality on you because they're assholes. So this is a game that's kind of like, hey, remember kids, graffiti is like against the law. And then it's just like, and also, all police are pigs.
Do a police brutality on you.
Yeah. That's what
those
I said.
The words that you said.
I said those on purpose, to be very clear. They do a police brutality on you, but then they're kind of like, oh, but remember, like, I guess graffiti is bad or something. Anyway, the police are all pigs. It's very funny.
Well, that was Jet Set Radio. And Jet Set Radio Future, I suppose, in a way.
I actually haven't played Jet Set Radio Future. I've watched people play it, but I haven't played it myself because I didn't have an Xbox.
Gasp.
Because nobody had a fucking Xbox.
I had an Xbox.
So that's available on...
Paul, you're not a person anymore.
Yeah, he is. Oh,
yeah. I had the original Halo one.
Yeah, and then when you were done with it, you turned it into a Linux server. That's what it was good for when the 360 came out.
That's the thing. Everybody is waiting for the 360 to come out.
Yeah, like, 360 was backwards compatible, so you're like, oh, it's a Linux server now.
Because fucking everybody knew that the only reason Microsoft came out with an Xbox was so that they could prove that they could do game consoles before they came out with their actual console, the 360. So everybody just waited for the 360.
I still love the Xbox One because it's the original Xbox.
The Xbox One and the original Xbox are very different.
OG Xbox, OG Gangster Xbox, because it was the first time I ever played Jedi Knight 2 Jedi Academy. Jedi 3 Jedi Academy. It was the third game, and so that's why I love the Xbox One.
Yeah.
Original.
And it had Knights of the Old Republic.
It did.
I mean, so does Steam, though.
Yeah, but for a while it was Xbox original exclusive.
Yeah.
Yeah, but not for that long.
For quite a while.
It was only like a year,
For my child mind, it was a long time when I didn't have the original Xbox, and I saw a friend playing, and I was like, oh, that looks awesome, and I love Star Wars, and then it's like, I can't play this. And I stole the Xbox.
And turned it into a server.
And then turned it into a Linux server. What did Ubuntu.
What did he use the server for?
Dicking about.
Porn.
Porn. Yeah.
That's what you said. Dicking about.
Dicking about.
A police brutality upon himself.
I guess he's just into that kind of thing.
Okay.
So I was next in the list then. I had three games that I hadn't managed to narrow down until this very moment. So let's have a look at what you could have won in terms of what I was going to talk about. I was thinking either Super Mario World on the Super Nintendo, because baller soundtrack and great platforming. Or I came very close to, just because James is here, mentioning Sonic Adventure Director's Cut, because I spent an awful fucking lot of time playing that on both Dreamcast and GameCube. But let me hearken you back to the year 2003, where Briggy, known for being mostly an antisocial person, would be involved with a very social game. The first, and still to this day, best MMORPG that I have ever played. And like I say, you can't go back home. Star Wars Galaxies and Empire Divided.
Oh.
This game, up until its decimation in December of 2005, that's not when it shut down, other things happened, we'll get there, was possibly one of the best MMOs available on the market. Star Wars Galaxies was a sandbox MMORPG, as opposed to the usual theme park, in quotes, that something like World of Warcraft was. Star Wars and Empire Divided came out about a year prior to Warcraft finally hitting the market and then just destroying every other MMO that existed. And, you know, I still blame Blizzard for what happened. and also Sony Online Entertainment for really fucking it up. But when this game first came out, this is because it was a sandbox, they offered access to multiple planets from the Star Wars lore, multiple job types and classes from the Star Wars lore and from the expanded universe. There's a lot of focus on the expanded universe for that game. And just sort of like said, go, here you go, this is the game. And so for the first 6 months or so of me playing this game, also I should point out, Jedi is a very well-known thing in Star Wars. People remember Jedi because every fucking major movie, apart from the Han Solo one, has a Jedi in it. Actually, even the Han Solo one has Darth Maul in it right at the end. So yeah, you can't fucking escape lightsabers.
Well, he's a Sith.
The thing about Galaxies was that there was no Jedi. Jedi was not a profession you could start as. This is not like World of Warcraft where you like pick warrior, rogue, sorcerer, whatever. Like, it's not sorcerers, it's... but fucking classes. You could spec into particular job types that you would then work your way up multiple profession trees so that you end up mixing and matching things or completely mastering one particular thing. So you had things like the Terrakazi Master, which is a reference to a fucking old-school fighting game, Commando... But there were 54 professions with a mix and match ability for nearly like 60-odd different skill sets that you could set into it. So everyone could be slightly different and varied, and eventually had min-maxes doing their own thing. But for that first 6 months, I picked Crafter.
I
sat at a desk in a cantina in a player-made city while other people were off doing adventure-y things with guns and Gaddafi batons and stuff, while I was sat there going through lists and making parts for people's houses. Like, here, I'm going to spend 5 minutes making a couch.
Brilliant.
And this was fun.
Is this the game you showed me some YouTube videos where you were showing me what the social scene was like?
Scene was amazing.
There was a genuine... I remember Briggy showing me like a video on YouTube showing what like a cantina was like in a totally player-generated way, not like... the developers have put in like some flavor stuff and you can go and join in. But like you were showing me like how people would just spontaneously create and run cantinas and there'd be music and like player run bands.
We're going to get into all of this over the next like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So I picked this game because I wanted to pick something that I played a lot of and that meant something to me like on a huge degree as a kid. And this is the game where my online handle comes from. Like, I go by Zepic on almost every online game I can pick, and that's because it was one of the automatically generated surnames for characters during character creation in Star Wars Galaxies. I was Matthias Zepic, and I ran Zepic Industries for a whole 3 years before that game became terrible, which meant that I was making droids, I was making sofas, I was making actual fun houses that you could place down. And what was one of the awesome things about this game is that anywhere outside of a major landmark city, like there was Mos Eisley and Mos Espa on Tatooine, there was Coronet on Corellia, you know, you got all these places and they were slowly adding more things as the game went on. You had huge expanses of land that were just unused barren wasteland between points and where you could just set down a house. Like, you didn't even need to be part of a city, you could just like, I've got a house in my inventory, bang, it's there, and you could go into it and... there were multiple tiers of how big your houses could be, multiple styles based on like the planet you were on. Even if you weren't on that same planet, you could drop like a Tatooine-style house on Naboo, just outside of Theed. Like, that's the thing you could do. You'd leave cities and you'd find, like, just a ring of houses just where the limit cut off where you couldn't place things because people didn't want to travel too far out from major epicenters to get their shit that they were storing.
You know, that's like millennial wish fulfillment. Like, I can just put a house on here and live there now.
So, like, outside of the... And I don't want to spend too much time on it, because I spent years of my life fucking decorating my house, because even after I stopped being a crafter and started doing adventuring type stuff, you would get rewards that were specifically meant to be decorative. And people would, like, decorate guild halls, or you'd have canteens set up, to the point where there was an entire in-game feature where once you got enough places, like, houses together, and people registered them, you could have someone set up a city. And there was actual politics within the game for people running cities and people being elected mayor of a city in a game, to the point where about a year in, we had fully established cities that were player-run and that people didn't spend time in the lore-based cities that existed. Shout out to anyone on the Valsin server. I still remember Oasis Paradise on Tatooine being the place to be for hunting Kray Dragons.
So with what you're saying with regards to that, sorry, I find this really fascinating because I really love this kind of social MMO stuff. Like, is that kind of like a precursor to what, I guess, EVE Online eventually did in terms of being so player-driven that it became autonomous?
Somewhat in some degrees, but I've played a lot of EVE Online. I can't get that same feeling because there isn't that same level of, like, personability with what you've got.
And I guess
in EVE Online you play a spaceship, and they've been adding more humanized stuff to it, so you play a human that's in a spaceship, but Star Wars Galaxies was just bang, you're there, you got no abilities, you got no stuff.
And I guess
the Skyrim intro, essentially.
And you have the advantage of having this huge,
you wake up on Tatooine, like, you're awake.
Like, and you have this pre-existing, I guess, attachment to the Star Wars universe as well,
which is great because it was also forced people not to become like the Jedi. Which,
that seems the most interesting thing to me.
Before I touch on the destruction, because I could wax lyrical about Star Wars Galaxies for hours, because I played it for maybe over 3,000-4,000 hours when I was younger, up until the point of its demise, which is shortly after Trials Everyone came out, which was shortly after Episode 3 came out in cinemas in 2005. But the game itself, it had some interesting stuff going on with it outside of just the social ability, but also in terms of it being a game. One of its first major expansion packs was called Jump to Lightspeed, which was an entirely separate game stapled on top of the Star Wars Galaxies experience. So you run around, you're a character, you do your thing, whatever you want to do. You can join any of the factions, you know, Empire, Rebel. I should point out, this takes place in canon between episodes 4 and 5, hence the No Jedi thing. So it's like full-on effect of like the Imperial like stuff going on and a few Rebel bits and pieces happening throughout the different planets. I'm trying to condense as much of this MMO into like 10 minutes as possible. So when Jump to Lightspeed came out, it was essentially, if anyone's played X-Wing versus TIE Fighter or any of the earlier X-Wing games, it was X-Wing in an MMO. You could customize your ship, you had to like do missions to like get better ships, earn money, buy a better ship. Eventually, if you were a Rebel, you could get an X-Wing. There were like multiplayer ships that you could get in this game, which acted as houses in space, which you could decorate and have multiple people walk around on. And I remember spending 6 months of my life grinding to become a master Rebel pilot so that I could get the Nova Courier, like, top-end Rebel POB ship so I could decorate it as opposed to actually fighting it. Like, I have a ship in space, I have a house in space now with all my shit in it. It's great. And also it meant that you didn't have to worry about travel times from one location to another. Again, more mechanics-wise, you had to buy a ticket in a starport or a shuttle terminal, and then wait for that shuttle to arrive, and then get on it, and it would take you through a loading screen to wherever you were going. They came every 7 minutes in the real world. The minute you got Starship, you went to the Starship terminal and went, I'm fucking going. And then everyone became a pilot. It was great. It was like freedom finally at last. Like, the things that they put in there that should have been bad gameplay mechanics just forced the community to just bond over this weird shit we put up with. Eventually, they did include Jedi in the game. Like, even before the death of the game, like, Jedi were a thing. You had to do a certain amount of stuff in get the semi version of this. The version I remember from after the original CU through to the from the CU from before the original version of the game, because they altered this game multiple times in its lifespan, was that you would have to do a certain amount of things that would get you achievements on your character, like these badges for doing like Jabba's palace and going there and doing all the missions there and going to Nim's palace on Lock. And eventually, when you get enough, you could find out that you were Force-sensitive through a slash command on in the chat. And once you became Force-sensitive, you had a bunch of extra challenges to do that would take you to the Jedi Village, where you would slowly, over the course of, I think it took nearly 6 months as it rotated like the stages that you were doing, you would train in different areas and become more like a Jedi, until the point that you were a full-on Padawan. Like, Padawan was like a thing people like dreamed of becoming. and you'd finally get your glow stick, and then you could fight, and you'd be like way more powerful than almost everything apart from bounty hunters. And bounty hunters were great in that game as well, because you actually had bounties posted on real players, so bounty hunters would hunt actual Jedi in the game, so it became its own player-driven economy. But one of my favorite things about that is that there was a point in time where if you became a Jedi, you lost your ability to respawn. You gave that up. Becoming a Jedi meant permadeath was a thing.
Oh, like that
idea. So
you
become a Force ghost if you ever got killed. Like, they were that overpowered that if you ever were taken down as a Jedi, that was it. That was permanent death, new character go. Like,
oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah, so it became like... Like, the game died because World of Warcraft came out and they tried to make it more like World of Warcraft.
And World of Warcraft was all about constant respawns and grinds.
Well, they condensed it down to 9 like iconic classes from Star Wars. Jedi is one of them, so from level 1 you could be a Jedi.
World of Warcraft is all about streamlining and constant respawns, so the game which is the opposite.
And there was a full storyline that you played from start to finish to like get max level, because now there's a level system and stuff in there that wasn't in there before. So that killed the game. But rather than go over like why the game died and the death of the game, I want to go with one of my favorite stories for just the emergent narrative that can happen in this game. There was a time when I trained in the bounty hunter profession tree, and my friend Tom was doing the same thing. He was a bounty hunter. And we were all sat on TeamSpeak back in the days of TeamSpeak 2 with several of us bounty hunters and several of us doing other missions and things. And just hearing the conversation over TeamSpeak as my brother and my friend Tom were bounty hunters waiting for a guy that they got a bounty on that was a Jedi. This guy spotted them from a distance and ran into his house and locked the house down so that no one that wasn't on his friends could enter the house. So he knew that if he left the house, they would kill him. And they knew that they couldn't get in the house to kill him. So they sat and staked out his house because they added him to his friends list to know that he was still online. So there was an hour-long stakeout while we were all sat chatting on T-Suite 2, waiting for this guy to finally leave his house on Tatooine so that he could be killed so that they could claim the bounty. And this became this long thing of him shouting from inside his house for them to fuck off, and then goading him, like, come out and fight us, you pussy. Just constant this. I was like, that is just something that happened in that MMO. There was no game to, like, get around it. You couldn't just teleport out. You couldn't... He had to log off if he wanted to not deal with that situation. Without knowing how long Tom and my brother would sit and wait for him to, like, log back in and come out of that, because you'd log back in at the same spot. This was a thing that went on for days. This guy would travel from one location to another while we were offline, and we would instantly find him, and then he would have to like hide and log off and wait because he did not want to die and lose, like just get killed by these bounty hunters. That was one of like the most interestingly weird things that happened in that MMO that I don't think I've ever seen happen in any other game that I've ever played.
Well, and I think it's something where in modern MMOs that just wouldn't happen because they're designed to avoid player frustration, and so they deliberately give you mechanics to get out of that because they're like, oh, we want people to keep coming back and keep grinding and grinding and like microtransactions and things like that. Like, you wouldn't get that in a Destiny game, for example. But like, there was a time when MMOs let you do shit like that. It's like, that sounds amazing, and I'm really jealous.
It's the great fun of a sandbox, and this is why I play so much of it. And just to tack up before we move on to the next game, like, that's the thing that I want to mention in terms of what you were pointing out, because I've said it to you before, there's the cantinas and the doctors in this game. There was a time where if you wanted to go and do anything combat related, like hunt crate dragons, which is like the major money earning thing at the time, giant fucking lizards essentially, on Tatooine, they were cool, but they were like the most hardest thing to do. So people would like line up in a canteen because you need to get a buff, but you need to join a group with a entertainer who would be dancing or a doctor that would be doing combat stims. But they would set themselves up full-on scripts that they've macroed to accept an invitation from the person stood directly in front of them, add them to the group, run the amount of time that it needs to run to set off all of the different buffs, and then kick them from group so the next person in line would then be added. So people would actually be stood queuing and talking in-game. Like, it's a very British thing, I think, to be fair. To have actual queues of people in cantinas and doctor's offices waiting for the next buff as they all sat and chatted. And there was a really cool slash command you could do. Like, if you had any actual... Because there was credits in your account and then credits in, like, your bank in the game, because there's, like, escrow and then your actual credit. So you had to, like, go to a bank terminal and transfer things back and forth. But if you had credits on you at the time, you could do /tip and then space and then an amount of money if you'd selected another character, and they would receive that money into their account. So, like, it was, like, I don't know where this came from, where it was, but it was just good, it was a thing to do. Like, it was courteous to get a buff from an entertainer, so a Twi'lek's dancing and buffing all your combat skills, and as soon as that, like, 5 minute is over, to do /tip and drop, like, 5,000 credits in. So that person would just be earning 5k every single 5 minutes, like, by ever however many people in that group getting that book.
This is
and
the
that
thing,
was how they ran their game.
This is because at some point somebody went, I don't want to go off and fight the monsters. I don't want to go off and do the quests. I'm going to be like the doctor who just gives people buffs. Like, it's an interesting social dynamic in the game.
We had a city that we set up ourselves. I think it was New Arcadia that me and Tom set up, and we had a guild hall, and that guild hall was vendors and things that are secondary characters. To get a secondary character on a server, you had to buy a second account. You could have one character per server when that game first came out. So anyone that had an alt meant they were paying two subscription fees. We had alts that would craft and make things and then put them into the vendor inside the guild hall, and people would travel to our city to do whatever stuff was in our city, go to the guild hall, and then we get the money from the shit that we made. It just ran itself. And so every once in a while, if we would go to school, because again, we were in school at this point, wake up in the morning, boot up Star Wars Galaxies, and run a fucking macro for crafting, or for searching for like supplies that we needed for crafting, come home and be like, cool, that's done, and then log back in and go like, right, time to hunt Krayt Dragons, or time to hunt Jedi, and I miss this game massively. And if anyone wants to play it now, it's officially been shut down a long time ago by Sony Online Entertainment
servers.
Because of not only losing the license, but then Star Wars The Old Republic came out.
There's got to be a private
They do
server.
Have private servers for at least two, if not all three versions of the game that came out. I'm not sure if Jump to Lightspeed has been emulated yet. But there are three versions. There's the original vanilla experience. There is the combat upgrade, which brought a leveling system in but kept a lot of the other stuff, and it's the version I played the most of. And then there is NGE, the New Game Experience, which is essentially Star Wars WoW, which is what killed the game. If you can find it, I do believe there might be combat upgrade servers, but they're not as popular as either NGE or original servers. But they're well worth jumping on because there's like 7 or 8 different ones that run reliably now that you can install the client and play. It's like, you should own the game. I was like, I bought the game like 4 times to different fucking accounts. Like, I feel like I can emulate it at this point.
I think you've both earned that and also paid for it.
So I feel like it's worth it to jump in and see if you can experience it, because a lot of the features are there. And like years ago when I got into the emulated servers so I could play it again, they were kind of bare bones and missing a lot of features. And I played them again, not recently for this podcast, but like within the last year just to see how they were going. And it kind of is cool to do that. It's just a shame that the people I played with aren't there anymore. So like I say, you can never really go home.
But there are definitely, like, one thing that I will say is I have seen people talking about the private servers, like, outside of what you've said. And there are definitely, like, specific, like, insular communities where, like, you can find people to play with. And you can definitely, like, make friends. I mean, listen, we live in a world in which people still play Phantasy Star Online on the fucking Dreamcast on private servers. So, like, you will definitely be able to find, like,
and wherever he is out in the world, shout out to Grage of the 401st, my flying unit from Star Wars Galaxies. I only realized in the more recent years, thanks to, like, looking up history and stuff, he called it the 401st because that was the airborne unit in the Battle of Britain from Canada, and he's Canadian. So that's who we flew our X-Wings with and took down Star Destroyers, and we had great times doing that because the Star Destroyer fight and stuff in the X-Wing was also just fucking awesome game in and of itself outside of the MMO. Like, that's if they've got to the point of emulating that perfectly, I'm going to be on that. And you're going to lose me for like a good month or two to replay that and get my fucking X-Wing again.
So, Paul, did Briggy break the time limit?
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought he might. You're not allowed to ever talk shit about me breaking time limits again.
Only by 2 minutes, though.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah, and you also broke the time limit.
How much?
About 2 minutes.
That's 2 minutes. We've been consistent in breaking that time limit.
Okay, so let's let the other people talk now, because we're both chatterboxes, but these two...
So actually, you've got 17 minutes if we're going to be consistent.
It's not going to take me that long, believe me. I've just been sat listening to this and I'm thinking, fuck.
It's okay.
I was just looking through my Steam list of, like,
listen,
like,
Ashley.
What's old that I can play?
Ashley, listen to me. If you're not like us, that's probably a good thing.
This is debatable.
Don't be like us.
So, let me tell you a story.
I'm excited.
Yeah. Can you remember when the internet really wasn't a thing?
Yes.
Yep.
And people used to buy gaming magazines.
I have an entire archive of them that I'm digitizing, so yes.
PC Gamer, an official Nintendo magazine.
Nintendo official magazine.
Yeah, nom.
Nom, I have. I'm archiving it, yeah.
Anyway, go on.
Please, shut up. I'm trying to tell an interesting story here.
Go on.
So, I was, like, really tiny at the time, so, like,
Ashley
most
is
of the...
gesturing to make sure that we know that she's short. You could tell us an age for the record.
I'm trying to make this suspenseful.
Okay. I'm in all the suspense.
They're listening. They can't see your hands saying that you're short.
I can't talk without my hands, okay? Okay. If I sit on my hands, I'm not going to be able to talk.
Okay, continue.
Thank you. So my dad used to get all of like the PlayStation magazines and stuff like that because my dad was strictly PlayStation up until the 3 and then he decided to get 360 and blah, blah, blah.
The ones with demo discs.
The ones with demo discs. Oh, shit. I could have talked about the dinosaur. Fuck.
It went round and you could zoom in.
You could see its butthole.
Oh, God.
So my dad got one of the PS2 magazines and he got one of the big like A2 posters. And on one side, it got Lara Croft. And the other side, it got Nikki from Pandemonium.
Oh.
From Pandemonium 2, actually.
Now that's niche.
I know where this is going now.
And my dad spent ages deliberating over which one he was going to pick to put up.
Sounds right.
Yeah. And in the end, he ultimately decided on Nikki from Pandemonium 2.
Those triangle boobs were just sexier.
I mean, Laura had them too.
That's what I'm saying. You got two triangles, you got to decide which one is sexier.
And that stayed in our pantry for years. Much like my father, I was trying to think, right, which one do I want to, what do I want to play? And I'd come down to Tomb Raider, the first one, and the first Pandemonium. And spent a while deliberating over it. Until I realised that I got Pandemonium on Steam, which means that I didn't have to try and find an emulator for Tomb Raider.
So. Tomb Raider is also on Steam.
Yeah, but it's really... not that one.
Is that the one? Okay.
That's not the
Sorry,
one.
Sorry, Briggy. For those at home, Briggy just tried to show a picture of the Pandemonium poster and it was wrong, so he's just exiled now.
Are you going to sit and spend the rest of
I was trying
of
to find like old PS2 like magazine poster giveaways for like Pandemonium. Keep going. I'll stop looking.
But I'd got Pandemonium, so I thought, you know what, fuck it, I'm going to play this. And I'm glad I did. So, yeah, I picked Pandemonium.
One or two?
One.
Yeah.
It came out in 1996, so I was 6 when it came out, and I played it when I was about 9.
God.
So...
Sorry, can I just interject?
Yeah.
That Osteroid can grant all your dreams, even the dirty ones. It's the pre-rendered CG intro, which has the jester who has the stick that can talk.
Fargus.
Yes. And the line is, it can grant all your dreams, even the dirty ones.
So I picked Pandemonium, booted it up, got through the intro.
So it's a beautiful pre-rendered intro.
It's amazing.
It's so PS1. Like, it is. Like, imagine if you took, like, 100 PS1 consoles and you, like, distilled them down into, like, a perfect glass of PS1 essence. I feel like that would be
it
the
would
Pandemonium
just make,
intro.
No, it would just make the PS1 noise.
I mean, yes. But also, if you looked really closely, it would be like the Pandemonium FMV intro.
I remember brief explanation of Pandemonium for anyone who hasn't played it. If there's anyone over the age of, under the age of, what, 18?
Probably like 20.
20, yeah.
We're old, remember.
Yeah, we are quite old. It's a 3D platformer. What?
It's not a 3D platformer.
Is it not?
It's 2.5D.
2.5, motherfuckers.
Well, I am sorry.
It's pre-rendered, isn't it? Is it pre-rendered or is it polygonal?
It's polygonal. Yeah, which is like
it's
the
basically they couldn't work out how the camera was going to work.
It's like the one of the best things about the PS1 era games is like the fact that they were
like
2.5.
We have polygons, we have all these triangles, but we can't work out how a camera works.
Like Klonoa.
No. Yes.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Or Tombi.
Yeah. Or Babsy.
We're getting very dangerously close to like stepping on Caddy's territory right now.
I have not spent that much time reading the Wikipedia page, okay? So just bear with me a sec. Okay, so it's a 2.5D platformer.
I would like to formally apologise to Ashley. That was like dickish of us.
Just love 2.5D.
Oh, dear. You know, this is probably the longest I've ever talked since the Game of Thrones episode. So
I know, right? It's fitting that it's Pandemonium as well.
Yeah.
Oh, who did you play through?
Nikki.
Yeah.
I've always played as Nikki. I was going to just about to say, like, you've got the option to play as either Nikki, which is a circus acrobatic who has dreams of being a mage, and Fargus, who's a jester, who's a bit of an arse. So I've always kind of picked Nikki.
This explains also, so much about you.
Also, she can double jump. double jump of every spin attack every time.
But then
Luigi method.
You also had the Fargus who could throw his... Or he could throw the Fargus, which was...
No. Luigi method. Jumping.
Throw the Fargus. Got some corkers in this last couple of episodes, Paul.
There we go. Train of thought's gone again. So you can either play as one or the other. You used to press triangle to switch them between levels. Or in my case, you pressed Y because I was playing with an Xbox controller. It's a fantasy-based game. Basically, they cause shenanigans. The two cause shenanigans, and then everything goes to pot, and there's a big monster at the end.
It's quite surreal imagery.
Yeah. It's very brightly coloured, very...
It's not whimsical. Trying to be... It's no. Not trying to be realistic.
Yeah, it's not like the grimdark fantasy that you get nowadays.
Grimdark Pandemonium.
Don't. Somebody will make it.
Reboot.
The thing that I can liken to it that's most, like, most recent, which is really bad, is which is still quite old, is... The Shivering Isles expansion.
Oh, yeah.
Of Oblivion.
Yeah.
It's the only thing that I can think of.
Hey.
The Fargus is the Wabbajack.
Yeah.
Hey, Briggy. You know what I'd compare it to?
No.
Nights
no.
and Dreams.
No. No, because Pandemonium is fun.
Oh.
So, as a kid, I only made it past the first four levels.
As a PS1 game of that age, that's actually not too bad.
As an adult, I made it to the fifth.
Hey, that's an improvement.
How many levels are there again?
18.
I can't remember. Oh, yeah, that's quite bad.
However,
it's been a long time since
I had the magic of cheats and the internet. So I gave myself 31 lives, and all the levels opened. Still couldn't make it past the first boss fight.
Oh, my God.
Ended up rage quitting. That was pretty much my adult experience of Pandemonium.
Don't feel too bad. It took me watching like 3 hours worth of YouTube gameplay videos on a specific boss to actually get through Mega Man 8.
Yeah.
And that's saying something because Briggs played a lot of Mega Man.
I win for that. The fact that you like probably didn't do 5 hours worth of guides online to finish Pandemonium.
So what you're saying is essentially that if you wanted to, Ashley, you could just spend the next year getting through the game, or... Do other things you wanted to actually do.
Yeah, do the second up. Don't do me. Don't do my idea. Don't do what I always do. Like, just move on. It's not worth it.
Do what I do and just buy another game and be like, I'm never going to finish this.
Actually, yeah, no. Do the guides. Finish Pandemonium.
So, to kind of sum this up, because, as I said, I didn't actually have as much content as you guys had on it. Pandemonium was one of those games that kind of really set off my love of fantasy, which is the reason why I love Morrowind, I love Oblivion, I love Skyrim to an extent, I love The Witcher, and things like that, because like it had all of those elements and also had a great soundtrack as well. Like, mm-hmm. The soundtrack is
it
currently
really
running
does.
Through my head right now.
Man, I swear, there was a period between like 1992 and like 2001 where so many games had good soundtracks.
Yeah. Like, it was just an amazing soundtrack. It's an amazing experience. And even if I couldn't make it past the fifth level.
I mean, that
or
was
the mushroom boss.
That was most of me playing video games as a child. So, like, I feel that.
But it really did spur on my love for fantasy. But we'll keep it at that because I could discuss what Thrill Kill on the PS1 discuss my love of.
I'm sure we can do that on a future episode and I will join you.
Best thing about Thrill Kill was the Wu-Tang Clan game that was made on the engine when they released it.
Did you know that was the first game to have, like, multiple fighting... Well, like, more than two players fighting at any one time. It was, like, the four.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I actually didn't know that.
Yeah.
Really?
Also had a Dominatrix.
And I know quite a lot about video game engine history, so that's surprising to me.
Pre-Turtles in Time?
Well, it was Mortal Tap Versus.
Oh, good point.
So it was before Power Stone and all those sort of things. It was an arena fighting game which had four, because you had to switch views like of who you were fighting, which got really confusing.
Right, okay, that makes sense. That makes sense why I haven't heard of it, because most of the stuff that I've heard in terms of firsts for that hasn't included.
Imagine, like, also, Thrill Kill never actually came out.
No, which is why that it's engine...
Oh, like no, but like, I know a lot about shit like that.
That engine then got used by the Wu-Tang Clan game.
Oh, yeah, no, like, it's a known engine.
Wu-Tang for life.
Yeah. They ain't nothing to fuck with. So anyway.
That was the whitest way you could possibly have delivered that, and I appreciate that.
I feel like I mentioned three games, so I think...
Well done.
I think we're good then.
I'm genuinely surprised that, considering the date it came out, and our limitations for this episode, you didn't go with Morrowind.
I didn't actually play Morrowind until after I played Oblivion.
So same reason I couldn't bring up Mega Man 2, because I didn't play it until after 2004.
Yeah.
Same reason I couldn't do Nights into Dreams.
Well, now that you've all talked about the games that you couldn't talk about, it's time for me to talk about the game that I can talk about, which is Green Dog on the Mega Drive.
Yes.
Green Dog was a platformer for the Mega Drive in which you played a surfer dude who found a magical amulet on the beach.
Fucking yes.
And I can't believe you're doing this to me.
And when he put it on, all the animals in the world and people suddenly were magically repelled by you and had to hurt you.
I'm leaving this room.
His weapon was a frisbee, and they were both skateboarding and inline skate levels, but it was all 2D, and the way it worked is you had to go down the ramps and up over jumping over spikes and things. There was a level on the beach, there was a level in the jungle, there was a level in the aquarium. There was also the level in the city, which had the additional fun of that having the actual people in, but one of the ones in the jungle had, I believe, they were either natives or cannibals or something.
Hey listeners, would you like to listen to Paul being murdered by me? Because I can't believe he's fucking done this to me.
Yeah. So in terms of Green Dog as the abilities, because you could get power-ups, there was one which had auto frisbee, which had the frisbee just float next to you.
I'd forgotten about this game. This is amazing.
Yeah.
I know too much about Sega consoles to have forgotten about this game, but I can't believe he fucking picked it.
Yep. The actual character itself is based on like a French comic book or something.
Yes, I know this, and I hate that you've reminded me that I know this.
It had something like six levels, I think it is.
It was seven, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But one of the levels...
I fucking hate that I just tried to... Can I just leave? I'm just going to... We're not even on like the second floor. I'm just going to throw myself out the window.
One of the levels, you fly in a helicopter... And the helicopter has a little punching like glove on a spring, and you had to punch seagulls out of the air. and in terms of like the actual the best part in the aquarium level is you had to ride on the backs of turtles that would slowly descend into like an abyss, and you had to jump. Your time jumped because it was in precision jumping mode back in the day. You had to jump from one turtle back to another turtle back, and if you messed it up, you could be completely fucked because you couldn't change, like in midair, you couldn't change your trajectory. So once you'd like gone for that jump, you were committed, and if you fucked it up, it's gone.
So did you know that if you are a person like Paul, then I'm legally entitled to murder you? Because if you go into this much detail about this fucking game, and you act as though it fucking matters, and also you remind me that I have knowledge of this game because I am a fucking nerd, then I get to murder you and no jury will convict me, Paul.
But the best part about the game was when you had gone through the collecting of all the bits of the idol that you had to create and collect, and it would lay them all out, and you go at the end of each level, it would put out one more bit of the idol that you got through, and you put them all out at the end, and then you got to take off the actual amulet. And the way they did it in sort of like a 90s thing was then you went to hang out with beach babes, because that was the 90s.
Yeah, yes. I remember this bit, and I'm mad about it. And that is literally like your reward for finding the idol, and I'm Listen, why am I still here?
Oh, you know what? I love 90s games. I'm going to go fucking emulate this after this podcast.
Oh my God.
I have not thought about Green Nuggets in a long time.
Don't. Yes. It's not a good game.
It's surprisingly difficult, considering it is...
Well, you say surprisingly, but it's got like that fake difficulty where it's like, we'll randomly kill you all the time so that you'll feel like you got your money's worth because we couldn't be asked to actually design a difficult game.
It's Nintendo hard, like Contra.
Yeah, literally. It is that kind of like...
Like Mega Man.
They hadn't gotten out of, like, the arcade idea of, like, we want to get your quarters, so you have to keep paying for more lives. Yes. But also it's, like, the ending is so stupid, the whole framing is so stupid, and I hate that you made me think about this game, Paul.
So every time you're getting Beast of the Idol, they always had, like, a Aztec cave that you had to go through, and one of them you had to ride on a skateboard down a ramp and then make a perfectly timed jump so that you didn't hit the spikes at the ceiling, so you had to make sure you hit in the right
section. To be clear, if I'm remembering this right, if you don't do this, you fucking die. If you don't pull off like a perfect kickflip, they fucking like you're not radical enough for the 90s and they fucking kill you.
Yes, yeah, this is great.
That was how it was. That was the streets back then. Is there were teenage guys going around getting stabbed in the butt because they hadn't pulled off the right amount of jumps and
can I just say,
man, I don't know about you and your childhood, but I get what Paul's saying. Like, if you didn't know how to kickflip as a kid, like, you could get stabbed.
Paul, I'd just like to say I'm simultaneously so happy that you went last and so angry.
One of the other things that's quite sort of 90s about it is the health replenishments are the health replenishments are like junk food, so it's pizza, donuts, and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, because I guess everybody was just brainwashed by the Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, so
it's great.
Yeah, and
fucking childhood, rather.
Yeah. So yeah, it, to sum up, really, it is. It's a pretty radical game.
Yes.
Paul, when I murder you, they will take me before a jury, and then they will say it was justifiable homicide.
You get bonus points for using rad. You really do.
But also, I guess you also get points just for bringing up the most obscure game out of all of us. Like, I'm going to be honest, I'm genuinely impressed by the fact you brought that game up.
Well, I was thinking about doing Quackshot because everyone does this.
Yes! Oh, God, you get some of the best ideas, Paul. You really do.
But it wasn't as radical, and I know how much we love radical in this podcast.
Oh, it's so rad.
I'm so torn between being, like, impressed and also wanting to just rip your fucking chest off.
This is the raddest episode we've ever done now.
You know, I tried to talk about level design. I tried to be reasonable. But now Paul's out here talking about this fucking bullshit. And so I guess I just have to go to the dark side and start acting like Call of Duty are good games now.
James went for level design and thinking about, you know, the value of games. And the rest of it went, oh, nostalgia.
Okay. Although, on the other hand, I went for level design. You, Briggy, went for social design. And then...
Not on purpose. But mostly because I wasted 4,000 hours of my life sat in a cantina on my own in an online game making furniture.
And then Ashley talked about... Like,
I played Star Wars The Sims.
Ashley talked about a fairly niche game that was very influential. And then Paul was like, I'm going to troll all of you motherfuckers, but you especially, James.
I don't know what you're talking about. It's a really good game. There's a dog in it.
I mean, I'm going to emulate it now.
There's a dog in it, and just to piss you off, I'm going to kill the dog.
Well, you can't really do that because it eats the food health items if you don't
get
them first.
That's fine. I'm going to ROM hack the game so that I can kill the dog to piss you off, Paul.
If you jump on the fish that are flat in the aquarium level, bubbles go up.
I'm happy for you.
So, on that note... Right, that's been an episode of the podcast for Retro Recommends. The games that we've talked about in this podcast, Jet Set Radio and Jet Set Radio Future are available on Steam at this point and on various...
Jet Set Radio is still Xbox exclusive. It's just Jet Set Radio.
Okay, so just Xbox exclusive, and the other games are available through various platforms. I think some have been ported elsewhere, but definitely Steam. Pandemonium is available everywhere, including iPhone. Because I think that's where I first played it. Yeah, I mentioned it years ago.
The best version is on GOG.com, though.
Yep. I don't think you'll be able to find Green Lantern anywhere but emulation at this point.
It might be on the Mega Drive list. I can't remember.
It's not, if I recall correctly. I don't think it is.
Or it might be on the Mega Drive Mini when that comes out.
Oh, yeah. That'd be great. Yeah.
I still don't believe that's coming out.
You put it up there with like Sonic and Knuckles. It's like, it's classic.
Yeah.
Golden Axe, Sonic and Knuckles, Green Dog. Yeah. Perfect.
And this is the story of how I murdered every Sega executive.
And if you want to play Star Wars Galaxies and Empire Divided, you have to do it somewhat shadily by emulating it online. But definitely on the PC. You can't get on console. It's not a thing.
It's not Fantasy Star.
It needs a keyboard and it's not on a Dreamcast.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was Retro Recommends. I guess we'll probably do this at some point again in the future for the games we didn't get around to talking about this time, because Lord knows we all had various gaming pasts that we could probably talk about more games at some point. I know James can. Like, it's not even worth looking at him right now. Oh god. Okay, we'll never do another episode of Retro Recommends because I don't want to talk about Nights.
I'm going to do an entire episode about Nights and you can't stop me. Oh, so, that wasn't a port, that was a bad sequel.
It was Nice, of course.
Oh.
I'd rather play Green Dog.
To be continued.
So that's been an episode. You can get us online at all the usual places, which is, if you don't know by now, because it's in the goddamn description of every episode, we are on Twitter at TheGeeksCodex. You can contact us at podcast@thegeekscodex.net. Sorry, no, it's podcast@geekscodex.net. There's no there in that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've forgotten them, and I'm the one that manages them. This bodes well, doesn't it? So you can contact us through those platforms, wherever you're listening to us. If you're sick of listening to us on there, we're on a bunch of other platforms. We're on Spoofy, so I mean Spotify. We're on iTunes, we're on Google Play Music, we're on Anchor. Like, yeah, listen to us on whatever you want, like, whenever you get a chance. And we'll be back in a week's time with content that we haven't yet decided about. I have been joined this week by editor extraordinaire Paul Stevens.
Radical.
Been joined by the now unreasonably angry at what is pretty much just an okay
no,
retro game,
shut
James
up.
Cook.
Shut up. Next week there will be no Paul because I will have killed him. Goodbye, folks.
And bringing us back to the PS1 classics, Ashley Pearson.
The stick puppet's name is Sid.
Oh, it's Sid. Sid's the stick puppet. He's the...
Thank you. Ashley, you will survive the purge. Bye.
And I have been your host, Matthew Briggs, and now I'm going to go listen to a bunch of John Williams Star Wars music because that's all I can think about after talking about Star Wars. We'll see you next episode. Bye.
Bye.